All right, here we go. Overdrive off and running. TSN 1050 online, tsn1050.ca, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hazio, Doug, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. Shout out to our boy Nicholas Cage, birthday today. Shout out to Nick Cage.
There's
you
never ask me to stop drinking.
Wow, does that mean
when's the last time that guy's been in a movie that you were like, has he ever done a good movie other than that one?
Oh,
Face
Con
Off,
Air.
Maybe?
Con Air.
Con Air's
Con
a
Air.
Movie.
Have you ever watched that recently?
Yeah, I mean, it's always on like Sundays or, you know, Saturday afternoon on whatever AMC.
I don't know. I just think Rick Cage is highly overrated.
What about The Rock?
The Rock is a very good
movie.
With
Sean Connery.
Very
this guy's got a laundry list of movies. Honeymoon in Vegas with Sarah Jessica Parker.
Well, that's the big one, right? That's what we always play, and that won him an Oscar. He won Best Actor for that role.
Raising Arizona.
Yeah,
Honeymoon in Vegas wasn't the one he won an Oscar for. He got the one when he was a piss tank in Vegas.
I thought it's the same one.
No,
Leaving Las Vegas.
Oh, okay. So Leaving Las Vegas. Sorry, my bad. Yes, that is the one that he got.
There's one where it's almost like the Demi Moore situation where, you know, the guy wants to buy the girl's wife or whatever.
Indecent proposal.
This one was Honeymoon in Vegas, I think, where he was dating Sarah Jessica Parker.
Yeah, okay, I know that,
And the guy takes her to Vegas. But yeah, you're right, he's got two Vegas movies now that you think
about
it.
Yeah, that's why I just assumed I'm like, that's the big one, of course.
Do you think in Leaving Las Vegas he was actually gooned or he just played gooned? I think for that he would have to almost get...
No,
just
man,
blast.
You're playing. He's an actor, dude.
They shoot those scenes 500 times. Like,
in the morning.
Well, Noodles, you know a lot of people. I think he got wasted the whole show, and then he just said that's as good as acting as
actually,
I
you know what? I should ask somebody that, you know, I know acts, who's been in movies that I don't know if any of my buddies have had to be drunk in a movie. Remember Lachlan Monroe? The guy from Dead Man on Campus.
Yeah,
it's a tough movie. Like there's about 20 minutes in the movie where I think he's Cliff O'Malley. I think he's brilliant. I should ask him how many times he had to shoot those scenes. I bet you they're like 50 times.
Oh, they go from
scene.
Everywhere. They go
it's
from
crazy.
Everywhere because you need different angles, different lighting. Obviously, you're saying the words of the script in a
bit
of a different fashion, and the director is moving people around. You're changing things on the fly.
Yeah, I don't know. You're right.
Like, you can't be gooned the whole time.
Dude,
you know
how hard is it to look at somebody and say, you can never.
You can never.
Ever.
Never.
Tell me to
stop drinking.
Like, I want an Oscar. Like we can laugh at Nicolas
Cage.
Well,
what's that say about his career? He won an Oscar playing an absolute sideshow and a guy that's greased 24/7 in Vegas.
But that movie was riveting.
It really was. Heavy. He had some real personal problems.
he had an attitude.
A real attitude. The issue with Con Air is his accent is so awful.
He's such an awful southern guy. Isn't he playing like a southern guy or something like that?
Yeah, he plays some southerner. Like, that's why is that necessary? Why not change that? The second he starts talking like that, be like, you can't do it. You know what other movie was ruined by a bad accent? Sure. Inglourious Basterds, which is a great movie. Brad Pitt's accent is so awful in that movie.
When he's supposed to be the Irish guy?
No, he's like from Tennessee or something like that. He's a southern guy. And he's terrible. It's like the acting is quality. The story is incredible. It's a Tarantino movie, so you know what you're getting. But I cannot get past how bad Brad Pitt's accent is. I just can't take it.
Speaking of Brad Pitt, I don't know. Snatch was on the other day. Do you remember that movie?
All-time great movie. Top 10 favorite movie of all time.
I know. And I howl every time I see it. But listening to him talk... where you can't understand what he says.
But at least he's a gypsy or whatever.
Right,
and you're like,
a
piker
or however. I don't know what they call him. Yeah, and it's awesome. That movie, you're right, is a top 10. It's a sneaky top 10.
Like Bricktop is one of the great characters in cinematic history. And do you know what Nemesis means? It's such a great – we need some more drops from those type of movies.
Oh,
because who's the director? He was
Guy Ritchie.
Guy Ritchie.
Yeah,
Guy Ritchie.
No guy. No gi, Richie.
Never saying that again.
Yeah. I caught myself.
I know. Don't ever say it again. It's
You know what? It's in the soccer circles, too. That's what I heard.
No, it wasn't.
I'll go back. I'll say this. Oh, I know what you're talking about because there was a stretch there with Rick Cage. It was Ghost Rider. It was National Treasure.
Gone in 60 Seconds is a good movie.
I've just seen that guy
sometimes on a Sunday afternoon, and I look at him, and I can't be the only person that thinks this. I just look at him and say, that's the worst acting I've ever
seen. It's not strong acting.
Dude, I'll give you that.
It's not strong. But it's a great dude. His DB is off the charts. His resume, he's got. He's been in dozens and dozens of movies, and he's made a fortune throughout his career.
And apparently, he isn't shy to get after it. I know of a buddy who acted with him somewhat recently too. I think within the last couple of years.
Oh yeah, I've seen
and
Instagram
he was like, this
posts
guy
with him,
is,
and he
he's
is
up to something.
You can never, never. Ask me to stop drinking.
I think he was something like he was selling something or like there was some story that came out in the last month and a half that was really goofy. That was like a Nick Cage. What is he up to? Like he's morphing into Elvis or something. I think that might be a part of his thing. He's a big Elvis guy.
Well, that's what like and that was Honeymoon in Vegas. He was from the Flying Elvises.
Right. But I think that carried over like off the script and kind of off
really?
The studio. Yeah, he's like a big Elvis guy. And like Elvis is nowhere close to as popular. I remember when I was a kid, it seemed like everyone wanted to be Elvis or there were Elvis impersonators everywhere. I don't know if that happens anymore.
It's because there's an Elvis festival
in Collingwood, man. They got rid of it.
They got rid of it. Why? Because probably no one wanted to show up.
What? It was massive. You know how many people my parents' age... That was a staple in their year, the Elvis Fest.
I want it back. Tell me
your dad would gear up as Elvis, the Vegas Elvis, and show up in Collingwood.
Like old school, like, you know, like that's when near the end, Elvis
I'm not kidding.
On a few
I saw Paul Hendrick dressed up as Elvis eating
You're
lunch.
You're kidding me.
I'm not
Henny,
kidding.
Our boy Henny as Henny Elvis
was dressed
impersonator.
It's funny because... You just see them around town. You see this guy with big sideburns. They wheel into restaurants, and they got their gear on, and they're part of the Elvis Fest, and they just go back downtown.
We had a boys' trip to Vegas, and one of the guys on the plane got on the plane in an Elvis sequin suit and dressed like Elvis the whole trip. Like, you
like
land.
Like, your crew, you mean? Like, he was one of your buddies, or it was some...
It wasn't my crew. It wasn't the Strudwick, you know, it wasn't Take a Peek Strudwick, but it was
right.
It was a group that I joined in. So
and this guy was dressed
player,
as Elvis the whole time.
The whole time. Like we landed like this guy was flying in, I think, from Vancouver. I came in from Edmonton, other people from other places. We all met at the airport. He is buckled in an Elvis suit off the plane.
What is so weird about that is it's all like the second stage of Elvis's career, right? Like when he got to Vegas and he got bloated and he was just a mess and he was doing his runs there. That is the Elvis impersonator that I think of. But like the original Elvis was a good-looking dude. Like,
oh, yeah.
Owned the scene. Like back in the 50s, like he owned music and rock and roll. Good-looking guy, like styles and everything. Why don't people dress up like that? Like,
you
why
know
do you
what it
dress
is?
Up
it's,
with the
it's
Brian
generational,
Colangelo?
Though. That's
yeah,
what it is.
So,
it's generational. I think people don't identify with. Like I remember, still as a young kid, the day that Elvis died. I remember that because I was only
like
7 or 8 years
like
old.
Wasn't he eating KFC on the can? And
well,
just
he had a.
He had a
Hayes, you
going.
Tell that story that
oh,
he had
I've
a direct line into KFC.
Direct line. This guy, I guess, he had like a squash court in the house, and he'd play 2-3 in the morning. He'd fire up a game of squash, and he'd have a direct line to the owner of the local KFC in Memphis. Call this guy up at the house at 3 and say, bucket, house, now. Guy would
Dude,
have to get up.
That's how he died. He was crushing a bucket on the can, and
right.
It was lights out after that.
Yeah, wow. He would eat like fried peanut
go.
Butter and banana sandies.
What a way
sandies.
To go by Elvis.
Yeah, that's one way of going out.
And I know the sure. group. I know the group that actually owns his rights. Like there's a company called Authentic Brands who owns the rights to Elvis's everything.
Everyone's doing that now. Bob Dylan just did it. Neil Young just did it.
But that's the thing. Like if you look at that Authentic Brands Group, they own Elvis Presley. They own, I believe, part of Shaq. Like they own living,
like the
living
brand
legends.
That is the
yeah, the brands, and they also and people that have passed away. They own Marilyn Monroe's estate. Like it's crazy. And apparently Elvis was unreal. Like there's some stories coming out of there. Like my brother has been to Graceland.
Like, I wouldn't mind checking that out. Like I've been Memphis there too. Is not a town I really
have
care
you been?
Much for.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah, I have. It's something
is it cool down there or what?
It's cool. I mean, the guy's dead. It's his house. It's not like.
Well, I know.
Nice sales pitch. When COVID clears, I'm going just based on that. Well, the guy's dead. Yeah. It's his house.
Yeah, he's dead.
Okay.
It's his
well,
house.
I don't know.
Okay.
I walked around. I'm like, these wallpapers are a little weird. There's a waterfall here. There's the toilet where he was having a crunch and eating KFC. Like, it's. And you walk. You're right. I should not be the spokesperson.
Well, no, I mean.
For this.
What a pitch.
What if they had him on the pamphlet? It's like, oh, says, yeah, he's dead, and it's where he lived.
Right.
You know.
But I just walked out, and I'm like, okay, that was his house. There was some weird stuff in there, but it's not like, I don't know. It's not like the dart he was smoking was in the ashtray, and you're like, there was his last dart or whatever. I don't know. That's not my thing.
You got to be an Elvis guy. Yeah, exactly. It's not my wheelhouse. I don't have any Elvis on my phone or in the iTunes account or anything like that.
But if you can make a commercial with that, my pitch. That's my pitch.
That's actually, you know what's funny, though, is I think the generation, it's just they don't identify it. Like a 25-year-old person, even like the Grappler. The Grappler's 30 years old. Elvis's music, he doesn't
even know who he is. Doesn't even know who he is.
But it's not his fault. It's not his fault.
No.
Like that's a generation past him.
Elvis, like, come on. You got to, that would be the equivalent of me not knowing Sinatra.
Why is it his job to know it? Like, he doesn't
Do you know Sinatra? Do you know Bing Crosby? I know
that guy. I don't know one song either of those two guys sing.
You can't name a Sinatra song. You can't name
one.
New York.
Come on, dude. Get serious. You can't name one Sinatra song?
I'm not a music guy. I don't know Frank Sinatra music.
Okay, but
Elvis,
Hound Dog.
Graceland.
Graceland.
I don't know
that was
a tune. That was his house. Okay, let's move on here.
Yeah.
Speaking of being out of touch, did you see the quote yesterday? I meant to get to it on the show yesterday. I am having difficulty with this because I appreciate the story of Justin Hall. I like that he's been grinding through his career and he finally made it. He got paid and he's top four guy here in Toronto. But I saw a quote yesterday suggesting that The Sopranos is for old people.
What?
Like, yeah, he's like, no, that's for old people. That's old people TV. I guess he was making suggestions for Mikko Lehtinen, I think, like what kind of TV shows you can watch. I think that's a big thing for Europeans that come over that don't speak the language so well. Watch TV. You know, and just get basically ensconced in, like, the English language. And he said, no, I'm not a Sopranos guy. It's, like, too out of touch. And, like, I think you got to trade him with a comment like that or put him on waivers or something.
Dude,
because
it's not
outrageous. Wheelhouse.
I played in the league 20 years ago, and that's what me and my neighbor watched every Sunday night or whenever it was on.
Honeymooners. You know, I'm not saying go watch the Jetsons or something.
Yeah, but it's not his job to dig up something that was on the tube and popular 20 years ago.
But it's a great show.
It's an all-time show. Like
you got to talk him into it individually. Get him on the show, and we'll try to talk him into it individually. That's the only way you're going to get somebody.
Yeah.
But for me, he has no obligation. He has no interest. He's into whatever nonsense is on
now. Okay, but there are people out there that haven't watched Breaking Bad, correct?
You're talking to one right now, too.
See, Breaking Bad's an all-time show,
I've
believe.
I've heard that, and I haven't committed. But it's not that I would. It's not because I'm an ageist.
Okay.
You know, and I think it's out of touch.
No, but I live with somebody who has never seen Forrest Gump, and refuses to watch it on principle now.
Yeah, that's.
It was on the other night and did not come down to watch it. Refused.
Yeah, tough.
Even the Lieutenant Dan scene that I snapped a picture and sent to you guys, because
he was getting a lot of play on New Year's this year, Lieutenant
Dan.
Yeah,
he was.
A lot of people that were seeing eye to eye with that experience.
Yeah, you're right.
And,
but
I get it. But
I mean, I don't know where. I know we're off the rails.
Well, we're doing. I wanted to get to Nick Cage because of the Raptors. Clearly,
right.
I mean,
yes.
They lose last night. They're 1-6. Here's my concern with what I witnessed last night. It was nostalgic, very nostalgic. If you've been lucky enough, I guess, to just jump on the Raptors bandwagon the past 5 years, you've been thoroughly entertained, And you're very lucky. You're very lucky as a sports fan. If for whatever reason in 2015 you decided, I'm going to watch all the time and this is my team. You've had just an incredible run. And nothing will ever be taken away from what they have done over those 5 years, and in particular what they did 2 years ago. And I still believe they've got the makings of a team that is better than 1-6. You know, I am on a daily basis adjusting my expectations and my analysis of this team. I think that has to happen based on the way they're playing. But there was a stretch run between like 04, 05 when Vince demanded out up until about 2015 where they were a disaster. And what you heard on a lot of nights, silver linings, moral victories. Yeah, we got smoked, but I liked our game.
This guy's got to keep doing what he's doing.
I heard that last night, and it like jogged my memory. I'm like, whoa, this is freaky. We did this for a long time. Siakam, great game last night. Irrelevant, lost. Like, keep playing like that. Keep rolling like that. He did play better. He played absolutely better. But this idea that, oh, we're really starting to figure it out. No, you're not. Like, Phoenix manhandled you last night for the most part, especially down the stretch. And they shot, 50-plus percent from three again?
Their perimeter defense is awful. Fred Van
Vliet
gave it the old, I liked a lot of the things we were doing.
That's a loser's.
But they were down by six the whole game.
Yeah.
Like I thought there were, got tied, it was close, and then it was six, and then it was nine, and then it was 12, and then it was 15, and then back to 12, and then to 10. Like it never really got that close down the stretch of that game where I kept thinking, okay, they're going to dig in here, dig in the fourth. Feathers.
Like I never felt that confidence in.
Right.
And listen, I don't expect them to come out after, because it gets old. You can't come out after every game and kick garbage cans around and flip tables and freak. Like, I understand that. But if you're trying to find a moral victory in a game that you were chasing all night and you still gave up just an absurd amount of shots from the perimeter, which has been a problem all year, again, you still have no depth. Like, it's not like someone off the bench showed up last night.
Yeah.
You know, Siakam did his job. Great. He's supposed to. He's paid $30 million a year. He's going to play a lot of minutes. Awesome. The small ball lineup that we saw last night with Van Vliet and Lowry and Powell and Ananobi and Siakam, those are the five regulars, quote-unquote, that have been here for quite some time. Awesome. You can't do it every night. You can't play that lineup, 30 minutes a night. You're going to run into size. You're going to run into problems.
They got a chance tomorrow night at 10 o'clock against Sacramento. If not, they're coming home 0-4. I'm telling you.
Yeah, tomorrow feels like a borderline must-win.
That's borderline tough, though,
and it's game seven on the season.
Well, Corey Landsberg tweeted out, no team in the last 6 years, I think, has gone started 1-6 and made the playoffs. What are they, all of a sudden their fortune's going to change?
Well, that, I guess, is what you're holding out hope for.
Yeah.
And that's over an 82-game season, right? You've shaved off 10 games to make
up
the
difference.
Where you
got a ton of time to make it up. Yeah. You start like that in a shortened season, man? No way.
No, it's tough for sure. So Rob Perez will join us. He's big on Twitter about the NBA, and he's got a show up on online, and we'll get his take on what he sees right and wrong about the Raptors right now and where it's going and how they get out of it. And there's some hockey news out there as well. Ray Ferraro is back. Ray will join us just after 5 o'clock. I guess today the storyline is Austin Matthews could be a part of the penalty kill unit.
Why not?
Yeah.
What does it mean for him? The responsibilities, the amount of minutes, the pressure, or I guess the expectation that comes with that. We'll touch on that later in the hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, just after 5 o'clock. Big deal in the world of Major League Baseball. The Tribe have moved on from Francisco Lindor. We knew it was just a matter of time. The rumors were out there for the better part of 2 months. And I'm seeing a couple of reports out there that the Tribe are willing to pay Lindor around $200 million, probably over the course of a, 10-year deal or something. And needless to say, that wasn't going to cut it. He's seeking more than $300 million. And you have to believe now that the Mets have paid the price in terms of giving up prospects and the like to get him and getting Carrasco, who can, and if he's healthy, Carrasco could pitch. I mean, he's a top three guy in your rotation almost right off the bat. But Lindor's probably going to sign there long-term. And the Mets are moving and shaking. It's for 3 months now, it's either the Blue Jays are going to do something or the Mets are going to do something.
Hell yeah, and those Jays are sure chasing everybody, Brian.
They're in on everything.
Oh, everything. Yeah.
Yeah, Deshaun Watson. They're in on him now, apparently. They're thinking of acquiring him from Houston. And, yeah, it's just a matter of time. You just know it. Shapiro and Atkins, they're lurking in the background. Something's gonna happen here. The levee will break. But we'll touch on that a little bit later this afternoon. Steve Phillips coming up as well. Raptors 1-6. 1-6. Silver linings, moral victories. Nostalgic last night, hearing that kind of stuff. Like, it reminded me of, like, 2007. You know, it's like, what is happening here where you're getting blown out more or less? You're chasing the game all night, and you're trying to find positives. But that's where they're at when you're a 1-6 team, and we have not been in this position for quite some time. To chat about that amongst some other things, including the Knicks winning again last night. Like, the Knicks look like they might actually have something cooking here. He is the host of Late Night with Wob on FanDuel. You can find him on Twitter, at Worldwide Wob. Here's Rob Perez. What's happening, Rob?
Thanks for having me, guys. You got me all gassed up because you're talking about the Mets, who I'm a fan of. You got Lindor. Now we're talking Raptors. I mean, you got me. So,
yeah. So are you a Steve Cohen guy? You're a fan of the new ownership down in New York? I guess you have to be, right?
Yeah. I mean, when you have the ability to a blank check, you know, makes things a lot easier. But most importantly, it's a commitment to the fans. And, you know, he's very engaging. Something Mets fans really haven't had in the past. It was a low bar, but it has been exceeded.
Yeah, Strowman likes him. Hey, Strowman likes him. He sent him a tweet today saying, this is his owner. He says, you're a legend, LOL. I'm like, who do you think you are? Like, you're tweeting the owner, you're a legend, LOL. And then he puts his Twitter handle. I'm like, it's just a
you
total
called
Strowman.
Him, man. You knew Strowman. Yeah. Strowman will take Carrasco under his wing. Carrasco's older than him.
Dude, I text you and I said, you know that Strowman is going to be the guy to welcome everyone to the Mets. He's been there for 6 months. It's just like,
he opted out. He didn't even play last year.
Oh,
anyway,
God.
The 1-6 Raptors. We are having nostalgic vibes up here. We haven't been in this position in a long time. It's been a better part of 5 or 6 years where Raps have run off a lot of wins. Very confident, and they're 1-6. They look ugly. It's really, the stats say what they say. I mean, I'm concerned they're going to roll into Golden State later in the week, and Steph's going to shoot like 80% from three and score like 75 points because their perimeter defense is non-existent. What happened here? When you watch the Raptors, when you consider what we've seen out of them for the past couple of years, what is the biggest change? What is the biggest problem from your perspective?
All right, so first and foremost, you just mentioned the perimeter defense there. And while Nick Nurse is known for his defensive philosophies and strategies to the point that they have to have film sessions just about what defensive plays they're going to run, that's what a lot of teams usually do on offense. So from like a X's and O's standpoint, nothing has really changed from Nick Nurse's strategies, at least in that aspect. But when you dive into the statistics a little bit, the Raptors have made their name, the Horatic Park defense, on not allowing teams to score around the rim. They want to funnel opponents into the paint, and they want to make their life difficult, which they've been able to do in the past with the likes of Siakams, Kawhi Leonard's, and Serge Ibaka's. And whether they're there or not, the Raptors are still defending the paint quite well, being at the top of the league. Where they're really faulty, where they've got holes in the armor this year, is second chance points, where they are almost dead last in the league currently and conceding second chance points to their opponents. And what does that mean? That means they're not cleaning the glass. So why do you bring in Aaron Baines for 2 years for $14 million or whatever that contract was, for the whole purpose of filling Ibaka's space in that defense to get rebounds when he's not rebounding? You have brought on a very pro Chris Boucher analyst here who has been singing his praises since the moment he came into the league. So I'm going to continue to say you got to give this guy a chance 30-plus minutes here if Aaron Baines is going to continuously go out there and give you a net rating of minus 10.
Yeah, he has been terrible. I mean, Aaron Baines has been terrible. The downgrade was significant at the time. We knew it was coming. Aaron Baines and Alex Len in exchange for Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka. That was never going to cut it. We're going to throw Rob on hold. He's got the Nick Cage of cell reception right now.
That was close.
That was a little bit shaky. It was pretty crackly there. So
how do you fix crackly, though? I don't know if that's a callback and crackly gets better. I think crackly's there to stay.
I think he's on a landline, too. Yeah. I think that's the crackle. It's a landline and something's cooking there. But we'll get him back in a moment. But, yeah, listen, Gasol plus Ibaka equals Len plus Baines, not good. Good at all. Their front court is a mess. They have no size they can trust right
I now. I love it when those two guys were acquired. It was positive Friday. These guys are going to step right in. Seven games. Those two guys might as well be 905 players.
The goat.
Aaron Baines is essentially supplying Raptors 905 levels of production. Here he is again from the host of Late Night with Wob, Rob Perez. We got you back, Rob. It was just getting a little crackly there on one of our ends, but we got you back.
The takes were a little hot.
They were spicy.
Disturbing the line a little bit.
That's right. The volcanic level of take there, I think, was causing some issues. But, yeah, I mean, listen, as I said just as you were wrapping up there, going from Gasol plus Ibaka to Len plus Baines, I mean, we knew it was going to be a downgrade, but this is looking like a catastrophic downgrade. Like, they just can't possibly put together some size that they can rely on.
Yeah, and you know what? Let's remember that we played seven games. At least some teams have played seven games at this point. That's 10% of the season. It's a small sample size, and we're talking about a team that has won a championship in the previous two seasons. So I'm not going to give up by any means, but where their deficiencies lie are quite obvious. You know, we could talk about Baines versus Boucher, who should be getting the play time there. If you're 1-6, you might as well try Boucher and see how that goes, because you have nothing to lose at this point. But there's other areas as well, in addition to the defense. When your best player, Pascal Siakam, is going out there and is quite literally as valuable as the person that replaces him off the bench, there's a statistic for that. It's called VORP. It stands for Value of Replacement Player. And Pascal Siakam is currently 0.0, which means when he comes off the floor, the person that replaces him does exactly what Siakam does. And we understand that Siakam was really, really good. He was even being talked about for MVP what felt like a year and a half ago. And then all of a sudden, what happened? You know, what happened to this guy? And the league adapts extremely quickly to things that are successful. It is a copycat league. And when Siakam's move is just to spin around 50 times, the league has caught on to that a little bit, and they're going to need him to score. And that's just the bottom line.
Rob, we were talking earlier about the duration of the season, the length of the season, as opposed to a regular one. And Brian was talking about Raptors fans the past 5 years, so they've kind of had a nice little run. Solid team, always playoff team, contending team a bunch of times. 1-6, when are we getting to the point in a shortened season where this becomes a write-off? We can't be too far away from that. One of the people in our morning show already tweeted out that in the last 3 or 4 years, no one's made the playoffs starting like that. When is the panic button just crushed here?
I don't think you can panic, because you signed Van Vliet. You signed Siakam. You got Lowry under contract for this year. These guys are going to be on the team. There is no blowing it up with OG and Norman Powell all under contract. You've got the core here. So you got to figure it out whether it's going to be a successful season in terms of wins and losses or not. You can't hit the panic button and blow things up, because
I'm not talking necessarily about blowing things up, Rob. I'm just talking about this getting away from you and you're not getting it back.
And it's like they're a bottom 5 or 10 team in the league, and we got to accept it this year.
Yeah, understood. That's certainly a possibility. You know, if they go 1-10, it's going to be quite difficult to come back from that. But what I would want to see from the team is when, after a game, Kyle Lowry goes on the record and says, quote, "There's nothing to us. Teams are looking at us like, let's go eat." Those quotes can't happen. Even if you're losing games and you're competitive, that's a step up from where the Raptors currently at. So it's going to be a climb back to relevancy. But when you get quotes from a Raptors team that have been on the other side of quotes like that, yes, I will agree with you, that's a problem. But it's got to start with the leaders in Siakam and Lowry.
We're chatting with Rob Perez, host of Late Night with Wob on FanDuel, on Twitter, at Worldwide Wob. I hate to get to this point, because I agree with you. We're seven games in. It's early. You know, if they get a win tomorrow, maybe they get one at Golden State and Portland. They come home, and it's like, all right, we're 4-6. It's not the end of the world. That's asking a lot, considering where they're at. But with what you just said about who's locked in here, Siakam, Van Vliet, Anunoby, Powell locked in. I don't know what's going to happen with Lowry in the future. I think if they're a competitive team, he'll come back. I think ideally he and the Raptors would like him to retire a Raptor. But, I mean, who knows? It's a business, and that may be 3, 4, 5 years down the road. But Siakam, Van Vliet, Anunoby, Powell, cap flexibility, potentially a high pick if this continues to go south. You know, if we move ahead here 4 or 5 months, what is that worth in terms of the big picture? If you're Masai Ujiri and you're looking at this team, even though you had a down season, if it comes to that point, Siakam, Van Vliet, Anunoby, Powell, cap flexibility, high-end pick. Like, what does that mean for an architect of Masai's ilk into the future?
So I will bring up the situation in which you guys just mentioned, the panic button. If that button gets smashed and the Raptors are falling to like a 2-13, 2-15, it's not the end of the world, at least in my mind, because Kyle Lowry's contract is expiring. And in the NBA, that's not a bad thing, regardless of how much money they're making or what your record is, because there may be a team out there that wants Kyle Lowry, if they lose their point guard, to come in there and lead them to a championship. So you trade Kyle Lowry, you get back some important draft assets, and you free up some cap space. That money may come off the books regardless here, but Masai Ujiri has this team with options. And options are never a bad thing. Trust me, you're talking to a New York Knicks fan who celebrates options like their banners in the Raptors, because we simply just have never had them. Even if this season tanks, they've got their core, their young guys locked up on very favorable contracts, and they can go one of two ways with Kyle Lowry. Whether he's on the team or not, I would always say the future of this team looks bright compared to the rest.
Are you buying the Knicks? I mean, that was a big win last night. I thought they were going to get their doors blown off like a reality check. They look pretty good.
Cautious optimism, my friend. Cautious optimism. We've been here before. Okay, 5-3 feels like 10-0 to us. But, yeah, there's some really exciting and things going on with Thibodeau, the way he's got the team playing. And we're building towards something. The Knicks are building towards something as opposed to chasing it, you know, chasing a title with veterans at the end of their prime. That's what the Knicks do best. And then it just fizzles out and you have no future. It's the opposite this time. So that's why things are bright at the Mecca.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's better than the alternative, as you point out. He is the host of Late Night with Wob on FanDuel, Rob Perez. Great of you to take time, Rob. Thank you for doing this, man. We'll do it again down the road.
Thanks for having me, guys.
There he is, Rob Perez.
My guys in Philly, my man Embiid and boys, 7-1. They're looking nice.
You're a Philly but fan now?
I've always
Philly,
been
Brooklyn,
kind of
the Buccaneers.
I don't like the Bucks. My guys in Brooklyn, my guys in Philly, looking nice.
Okay.
Brooklyn had a bounce back the other day. They're back
on
track.
They'll be okay.
Without KD as well. KD's been interacting with COVID people, so he's got to step away.
Yeah, he's shutting it down for a week. Yeah, I think four positives the past week in the NBA, over 400 players tested. Four came back positive. And they're phrasing that as a positive because you just went through the holiday season and they kind of knew everyone was going to be interacting. And I guess that's a good sign. And speaking of COVID, you see the latest on the Browns? First playoff game in, 15 years or something? Their head coach can't be there. I believe six starters on either side of the ball are special teams, not going to be playing. Their facility has been shut down all week. They haven't practiced. And they got to go to Pittsburgh and play their biggest rival, who they have had real issues with in the past. I just don't see
how
they're going to figure that out. It's really tough. I mean, it's just
that's what
sucks.
I find crazy, because you talked about the head coach, and I don't know who was telling the story. It was yesterday. Someone said he handed the game ball to somebody, and that guy's got COVID. Mm-hmm. But if the coach has got COVID and they're in that huddle in all the room, hasn't he basically put everybody in jeopardy? Do you know what I'm talking about? It's like, how do they pinpoint certain players? And I know there's a defensive team, there's special teams, there's offense, defense, and they're probably all doing different things at the practice facility. But man, are they isolated that much where everybody's not in jeopardy?
I'm not sure. Obviously, they've tested everyone and they found a line where it's like, okay, on this side of it, we're clear. On this side of it, we're not. And that I guess, is the reality of the virus and how it's been handled. But the games go on. You know, we're playing this weekend in the NFL. And we're going to catch up with Trey Wingo into the 6 p.m. hour, continue to tee up the weekend in the NFL. Got a golf tournament. They're teeing off. They're out there right now. The Century is up and rolling in Hawaii.
My guy, DJ. Watch out.
Look at you just sneaking back into the degenerative lifestyle.
No, it's easy. It's very simple. One tour event per week. You pick one guy. You've got a shot to win, and that's your only chance at the hunch. That's it.
All right. You're slowly getting back into it.
And tomorrow we are having a full segment with Al's brother to go over the weekend games.
Yes.
Because me and him are back on track.
Okay, we'll do that tomorrow. And Ray's coming up, Ray Ferraro, in about 25 minutes. Auston Matthews apparently is going to get some penalty kill time. What does it mean for him, the expectations that come with that, and that more coming up. We'll touch on that. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Rays coming up in about 20 minutes. And the Leafs were not on the ice today, and they're working towards, I guess, next Wednesday night. And they're working on special teams, and it was revealed today, courtesy of Sheldon Keefe, that he's looking at using Austin Matthews a little bit on the PK. I don't think it's going to be a permanent thing. I don't think he's going to be the first one over the boards. But he's someone that has improved in the faceoff circle, right? He can win faceoffs. He's a guy that you might want to use. I think Johnny was saying this earlier today on the lunch. 15 seconds left in the kill. Get him out there so he can take advantage of basically, you know, the end of the kill. 5-on-5, maybe a lesser lineup coming over the boards, and all of a sudden you see him taking advantage of that. But, you know, there's been a long history of high-end centers that kill penalties. Sundin killed penalties here for 15 years, more or less.
All the top-end guys, Brian, kill penalties to some degree. Mm-hmm. And I'm paying a guy $11 million a year. I think he could be a well-rounded player and find a way to kill penalties. If it's for 20 seconds, that's fine. If it's for 15 seconds, that's fine. And like you mentioned, I don't think they expect him to go over the boards every single time and be a guy like Bergeron who's just Mr. Penalty Kill. The one thing I'm afraid of in that scenario is just don't try to be a hero and be Mr. Shot Blocker.
That's where I was going. Oh, sorry to jump on you, but there was an image, was it 2 seasons ago, McDavid taking a slap shot on the ankle. He got put out at the end of the power play.
I don't
play.
Know. You got to be a team guy. You got to be a team guy, exactly, but stay away from it.
If he does the Flamingo there and they score, you know what the thought process is, right? So McDavid took it like a champ, but it was on the ankle, and he skated right off. And you're sitting there going, really? Like, that's what we need is you know, the best player on our team killing penalties. I get it, and I understand it, and you're right, $11 million, and Matthews can do anything. He's that type of player. I think he's a Swiss Army knife. And I, you know, who wouldn't want McDavid and Draisaitl on killing penalties because they're a threat every time? But that's it's the double-edged sword because you want them in the lane. You want them blocking shots. They may accidentally get hit with a slap shot from the point on a one-timer. And I know you can't bubble wrap him, but that's the only thing I can think of with a guy like Matthews. If you have to play at the top of that umbrella, let's say, and that's with that one-timer scenario, you could get one off the laces that could change the fortunes of your own season. You crack a foot or something like that. That's 4 to 6 weeks.
No, it's certainly not ideal, for sure. Right. But I think he's got all the capabilities in the world. If you're a smart player, you can be a smart penalty killer.
No kidding. And he knows, you know, what I found was smart players that played on the power play, they understand it a little bit better. There are some great fourth-line penalty killers, but I don't think they ever quite understand the thought process and thinking ahead of the game of what's, because power plays, your most skilled players are on there, but there's only so many plays you can run. You know, you can go back to the D, you can go through the seam, you can do the low play, you can, at some times, you can bring in some individual skill where it's special, but for the most part, you just have an understanding. So I think it's going to be a great opportunity for him to sniff out a pass, to sniff out an opportunity to maybe go on the offense and not be ridiculous about it, but $11 million, you should be killing penalties.
That's what it comes down to, right? It comes down to him molding into the complete player that they all thought they were drafting when they took him first overall. We all knew about the scoring ability. He has shown up in that. Like, no one scores more 5-on-5. Nobody. Ovechkin doesn't score as much 5-on-5.
The skill set is there. He can get the nerds off his back, too, if they talk about his game, and then they peep up and they go, yeah, but he doesn't kill penalties.
Well, but this is big for that. Like, you know, you're pursuing a Hart trophy or something.
That's what they would say. Yeah, he doesn't kill penalties. He's not worthy.
Well, but Marner kills penalties. Like, we forget that. Like, Mitch Marner.
Very good.
He could be their top scorer this year. Just points, not goals, points. And that's a guy that we've seen blocking shots. It's almost contrarian to what I was saying a minute ago. I don't know if you want your best players there. Like, I'd much rather have Zach Hyman and maybe Kerfoot, like, knowing in the meat of that penalty kill, like, they're trying to just get the puck down. At the end of the penalty kill, when you can try and take advantage of a second power play on the other side, maybe guys tired, absolutely. Go the other way and be aggressive. It's very close.
Well,
it's very
can be scary.
Scary.
I get it, and point. I understand it, but I also think this speaks to this new mood around this team and the new attitude and the new messages being sent. Like, they have made it very clear for the better part of 5 months that it is going to be their best players that drag them wherever they're going. Right. And they are committed to winning. They're not interested in development. They're not interested in anyone feeling good about themselves or, hey, you get an opportunity and you get an opportunity. It is very clear and cut. We are going to put forth our best foot every single night. And if that means Matthews has to play 24 minutes and three of those minutes are on the penalty kill, that's what he's got to do. And I think he has grown as a player as well. I'm not sure how comfortable he would have been doing that at 18 or 19. You know, I think he wanted to ease into his career. He scored 4 goals opening night, you know, rookie of the year. But it was like, let's just continue to grow and just give him a little bite, a little taste here or there. Now it's time to unleash this dude. Like, this is his 5th year in the league. He's a top 10 player in the league. And let him go and play. Like, the game plan should revolve around him. You know, how do we use this guy the best possible way? Not Alex Kerfoot. You know, right. Not even Zach Hyman, who we all love. If you got to get the most out of 34, and then everything else just trickles down from there.
It's like Ovi. It's not all about Ovi, but the game plan a lot of the times is, how do we utilize what this weapon of a shot this guy has? How can we put him in spots to make an impact on a game? It's not about them making about Ovi. It's about using his arsenal of talents to beat the other team, and that's what you do. You continue to put your best players in a situation to destroy the other team. It's very simple. And Washington's been doing it with Ovi. They basically tell him, power play, stay out for the whole 2 minutes. You're that valuable on the power play. Mm-hmm. We find 3 or 4 one-time opportunities for you every single power play. Why would we you know, pass that up?
It's worked. It's worked for 12 years, 13
but that's,
years.
That's where, I mean, you're right. Like, Washington, their systems are catered to Ovi. Not just on the power play where they say 2 minutes. I think there's 2 teams in the National Hockey League. I remember talking to a coach last year that 2 teams in the National Hockey League that don't play the left wing lock because of their situation. One of them was Washington because Ovi, they don't need Ovi cutting the ice in half. They basically want, they've planned their whole neutral ice around Ovi and his lack of ability to get to certain spots. Isn't that crazy? Like, everyone else plays a left wing lock.
Right.
There's 2 teams that don't because they want a right wing lock. I think Ovi is a left wing. I can't remember. It was vice versa, but Ovi was the guy who was stationary in the neutral zone because they don't need him, and that wasn't his strength. So play to your. Gets back to your point, Hayes. It play to the strength of the star players.
Well, exactly. And I look at, there's a lot of star power in this country, and if we want to focus it on the 7 teams up here, I think there are obviously layers of players and their capabilities. I think McDavid is at the top on his own. I do think Draisaitl and Matthews are in the same group. You know, I think Draisaitl is a little bit ahead of him right now based on what he's done the last 2 years. He deserves that. He won the Hart last year. But I think Matthews, I wouldn't be shocked if Matthews had as good or a better year than Draisaitl this year. I wouldn't. And then I think you start the next layer, and that probably includes Marner, Tavares, Scheifele, Wheeler, Pettersson, Tkachuk, you know, whoever else you want to include. But Draisaitl not only kills penalties, 5-on-3, you were saying this last year, Noodles, he's the guy over the board. He'd kill a 2-minute 5-on-3. That's Leon Draisaitl doing it. And if he's not on the ice, there's a good chance McDavid's coming over too. So, you know, I am curious to see how Matthews takes another step, because I thought he took a big one last year. I thought he was their most consistent player. Best player.
Monster.
He is their best player. He is the poster boy. It doesn't matter who's got a letter, who doesn't have a letter, what the contract is. There's other good players on this team. That's why the expectations are high. Marner's in that conversation. Tavares, Riley. But this is Austin Matthews' team, and I think he should lead the team in minutes. I think he has the capability of leading the team in points, and I think he is going to be the guy that drags them where they're going to go. And it's got to be a crew. Right, it's you look at Tampa, it was Point, it was Hedman, it was Vasilevsky, it was Kucherov. It's got to be a crew of guys. But if he's not at the top or real close to the top, that's going to say a lot about where the season goes.
I agree.
You know, Matthews,
I mean,
he's the king of the county in this.
He's got to be in the top 5 in Canada with that North division as far as production.
Just
period.
Overall, you watch him and you're like, that's a top 5 player in the country.
Dialed in.
And he is. He's supposed to be anyway. You know, right. I think it's more about him moving up. You know what I mean? Like, as much as I like Scheifele, I like Pettersson. They're not better than Matthews. If they are better than Matthews this year, that's a problem. I think it is a problem.
But you know, I mean,
if he can pass Draisaitl, you're like, now he's really rocking.
He's challenging Draisaitl, you're right, in certain things. But Draisaitl still had 30 more points than him last year. 30.
Right. But would you be shocked if after 56 games you sat there and said Matthews was better than Draisaitl? Would that be shocking to you?
I think it would be close. I mean, I think Draisaitl's a better player, personally.
Okay.
Because if I said to you somebody had 30 more points than the other, don't look at the players. Just look at the stats of the last couple of years.
It's a lot.
Like, I'm not. That's not a slap on Matthews, because it's more about I'd like to see Matthews, his production, to be right there, and I believe he can, but he has to do it. Like, you can't just say he's capable of doing it. He's got to do it. That's my point.
Of course he does. I think, you know, that's more chipping in more points. He scores at a clip that is kind of unparalleled in the league. But it's also about just morphing into a better all-around player.
You're right. Which, a complete player.
Yeah, like, you can't argue Draisaitl's like significantly better defensively than Matthews.
Not at all.
The team has more
not
success with Austin Matthews killing penalties and doing a better job defensively, and they ultimately go on and have more success as a team. Their thinking is Draisaitl could have the 30 more.
And that's it.
Like, go talk to Bob. You think they care? What did he have? 50 more than Patrice Bergeron. They're probably like, I kind of like what Patrice brings to the table.
Thank you very much.
All right, hour two coming up. Ray Ferraro will join us. Steve Phillips will join us at 5:30 on the big trade in baseball today, what it means for the Blue Jays. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.